Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome everyone to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that is known for its unique take on everything from the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, as always, John Mills, and with me, as always, is my very dear friend, Matthew Rushing. Matt, why don't you go ahead and give everybody a greeting in Rodian?
I can't.
Perfect. I can't in Rodian means hello.
There you go. It's so weird.
We have just taught everybody something new about Star Wars.
I love it. I mean, I had no idea I could speak Rodian. It's a little bit like, you know, what's her face in Nemo. I can speak whale too, I think. So,
yeah.
You know,
you know, that's actually something we should come back to though, because, and I know it'll seem tenuous at first, but the way that Greedo's lines were originally written, and I can't remember if I'm remembering this from the novelization or not, but you remember how they handled the universal translator from Star Trek Beyond?
Yes, yes.
That was one of the thoughts. That was the original thought for how they were going to handle his speaking. And I'm kind of glad that they just went with Rodian. But
I would much rather just have subtitles and people understand it. Although, you know what's really interesting is Chewie never has subtitles.
That's true.
So weird.
Well, I mean, honestly, as somebody who has a dog and a cat, I can tell you that I can understand them perfectly. I can't speak dog. Well, I mean, I can kind of speak dog, but you know, it's a tenuous pronunciation at its best. I don't know. Why don't they have subtitles? That's a really good,
that is a really good question.
That's a really good question, actually.
I wonder if it was just that thing, like you were saying, where, you know, Chewie kind of, I mean, he's modeled after the family dog. He's, you know, very much.
And what was that dog's name?
Yeah, Indiana Jones, or just Indy.
Just Indiana, yeah. That's why it's such a great double inside joke at the end of Last
Crusade. It's wonderful. And so I think that it does a really good job of, like you said, you know, Han understands his friend, but not everybody understands his friend. And so it just creates that. And it's kind of fun because, you know, I mean, Chewie doesn't have a lot to do in the movies, but what's interesting is the way that you always understand him. Even, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can understand what he's saying because of everything that's going around him. It's great.
Okay, so this wasn't what we were planning on talking about, but the thing is, I think we've opened up a good can of worms, and that, like, this is one of the things that actually, like, occurs to me right now, and I don't want to lose this momentum because, like, this is, I think, a good topic. Okay, you're mentioning Chewie, and Chewie doesn't get a translation, but then, you know, Greedo gets subtitles, Jabba gets subtitles, Bib Fortuna doesn't get subtitles either.
Luke, no, you have to know what he's saying right off of Luke. You're right. He just speaks in Huttese. There's no translation there.
And even when he speaks to Jabba in Huttese, Jabba gets subtitles, but he doesn't.
He's no Jedi. I mean, we didn't really
need subtitles.
You're right. That is really interesting when they choose to use subtitles and when they choose not to. And I feel like maybe the choice for subtitles is when they need the character to be explicitly understood. You know, when Jabba is saying what he's saying, you obviously have to have that there, or you have to just have him speaking basic. And the same thing with, the Greedo scene. There's no way... basic is going to look good coming out of that mouth.
So it just
makes much more sense to have him speaking in another language and have Han be able to understand it.
Now, see, here's a question, though. Okay. And this is sort of where I'm going with the momentum is with the prequel trilogy, there was a very conscious decision to have the aliens speaking what English, but, you know, called basic. In, you know, Star Wars lore, English or Arabesh when it's written, which I've never gotten an official pronunciation on that. Is it Arabesh or Arabesh?
That is, I have always said it and heard it as Arabesh, so I'm okay. going to go with that.
Because I always took it as sort of like an imitation of the word Arabic, you know?
I do believe that it probably has its pronunciation and idea probably based in that, so.
And actually with the written language, something that sort of is strange is the... With Arabesh, it used to scroll in the original versions of the movies from right to left. And then when they went back and they redid the effects, I don't know if this is true across the board, but I know that there are at least a couple of times where you see a readout when R2 is talking and it goes from left to right. Hmm. And it's like, it's one of those things where I'm like, why would you change that? Like, it was cool that it was going from right to left. It underscored that it was sort of like a foreign language for English speakers. You know, right. Like, why would it go like left to right? Like, not everybody reads that way.
I don't know. That's a good question. I wonder if it was, you know, when they're, you know, redoing some of the effects, it's just one of those things that maybe got missed, you know.
Or maybe it was a conscious decision for what, because like Star Trek II, they did the same thing where the, when the Kobayashi Maru stats go away in the director's cut now, the 4K mm-hmm. version, now they just disappear off the screen instead of going off one random letter at a time like they did in the original
right.
cut.
Right, right.
Which I yeah. think is just a strange decision, but whatever. But okay, so all right. Coming back to the whole languages thing with the prequels, I almost feel like there would have been a better acceptance of, you know, characters like the Nymoidians if they had been subtitled. Do you think that their time on screen was simply too much that they couldn't be subtitled, or do you think that it was just you know, a more mundane choice, like, I don't want to invent another language. Because I've never read any, you might have read something, I've never read anything where they had like an official discussion about it or a decision or anything like that.
You know, my guess is that your idea is actually probably right on cue. The fact that they do speak a lot, do you really want to subtitle that much of the movie? I also think that because the world is going to be bigger, you know, the prequel world is so much bigger than what we see in the original trilogy. I mean, we see so little in the original trilogy, really, when you think about it. And mm-hmm. I think that George's thought process was, let's use accents to give us an idea that these people are speaking a different language without actually having to go in and create another language, and therefore we kind of create this feeling, because he also carried that into the Clone Wars, I really enjoyed that in the way that, say, Twi'leks spoke with a French accent. You know, you got this feeling like it was an alien society, their language created this kind of accent that they have, and it felt very realistic. And I'm thinking that's probably what he was thinking when it came to the Nymoidians.
Well, I think he made, because he caught a lot of flack for the accent that the Nymoidians had when Phantom Menace came out, and the accent that Jar Jar had, and which is, I think is completely unfair. But I remember the magazine's out of print. I want to say it was Starlog, but there's no way. I don't think Starlog was still in print back in 1999. I could be wrong about that. But it was an interview with him, and it was post-release, where you're right on the money, where he said, I'm just remembering this now, he said that the decision to give them accents was, he hated the fact that when he was watching sci-fi movies when he was growing up, everybody spoke English, and they all spoke it perfectly inflected. And it's to get to your point.
And it usually sounds British. I mean, so.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. okay. Yeah, well, because the thing is, there's an odd undercurrent there, too, of is there even, because, you know, any artist makes something and they put meaning into it without even realizing it sometimes. Maybe that is actually a big indicator of the change in the world, in the makeup of the quote-unquote world, the galaxy in this case, where everybody was speaking the common language, as it were, when it was coming to things like the Jedi and the Naboo and the Trade Federation and stuff like that. And so everybody you encounter on, you know, a primary level in the prequels is speaking basic. But then stability and order they no longer organically occur. They're imposed by the Empire. And so maybe that's just a sign that like there's disunity among people. Like the Empire has brought those divisions back to the forefront, is that they're not speaking the same language anymore.
You know, what I was thinking was, is that I think the Republic has a very wide net. And yes, even though we are on, say, Tatooine in The Phantom Menace, and of course in Attack of the Clones, I think that the Republic's influence, and in a lot of ways, say the way that English has become the kind of the universal language of the world at this point. I mean, if you want to do business, you learn to speak English. That's just kind of the way it is. In every country, any major business, they speak English to deal with the rest of the world. And so, but, you know, by the time the Empire comes around, and we're only on the outskirts, you know, for most of the films, I mean, you know, we're on Tatooine again. We're on Hoth. We're on Cloud City. Yeah. We're on all of these like far flung places that are doing their best to stay basically isolated from the Empire. I think you're right. In a lot of ways, people kind of reverted back because there isn't that overarching Pax Republica that, you know, instead
Ooh,
of
I like
you know
well
what I'm
done
saying?
I like yeah no I like that play on Pax Romana. We need to drop it like some sort of bug in somebody's ear who's writing these books to say, hey, use Pax Republica.
Yeah.
Oh,
there
wow.
you go.
No, because think about that. Wow, you could even set something like back in the you know, when the Grand Army of the Republic is around. It's like we're imposing the Pax Republica, you know, because that was the, you know, SPQR, Senatus Populusque Romanus, Senate and the Roman people.
Yeah.
You know?
No, exactly. And when you think about the fact with the Clone Wars and, you know, the proliferation of the army for the Republic being all over the place, you know, it makes sense, again, that you would really be hearing, for the most part, basic. And then as that crumbles and the Empire takes over, of course, I'm sure that it enforces basic, but as a way of almost rebellion, people kind of start to go back to, you know, their root languages. They go back to their tribal languages. You know, things get tribal again. And, you know, as Jen Erso says, I think people don't even think about it, but this is a rebellion. I rebel. And one of the ways to rebel is by not speaking the language of the imposed government.
Could you even make an argument, maybe, that by people speaking their native languages and balkanizing themselves, as it were, it makes it harder for the Empire to listen in on them and keep tabs on them? Because if there's a listening device, then it has to be taken back. Oh, what are they speaking? And then it has to be taken back. Oh, they're speaking this language. And because we're not dealing with a universe where there's a universal translator, right? Like Star Trek has that ultimate get out of jail free card where like anybody says anything and they're immediately understood. Whereas Star Wars is much more, you know, forgive me for putting it this way, real world. So I think it would almost be interesting if they could work into the official continuity. The people speaking their own languages is, like you said, a form of rebellion. But, you know, in partnership with that, it's a form of rebellion that makes it just harder for the Empire to listen to them. It like they know they're just making it harder for them to be followed. Does that make sense? Or do you think
I think it makes complete sense. And I think that what's really interesting about that is, I mean, it's even just bringing it all the way back to where we started with Chewie. You come full circle with this idea of there is a character whose people are still under the thumb of the Empire, you know, and have been so mistreated by the Empire. So to have Chewie, and I don't even know if it's possible for Wookiees to speak basic. You know, that's not something we've ever learned. But my guess is probably really difficult for them.
Well, if
but
we go
also,
back to...
what a great way of again... showing the diversity, you know, I think is really cool. So
I always have trouble keeping it straight, but I can't remember whether it was, if I'm stating this right or not, please correct me if I'm wrong. But if I recall correctly, with the Thrawn trilogy back in the early 90s, Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and The Last Command, there was a Wookiee they encountered who could speak a heavily accented basic, but it was because he had a speech impediment. Am I remembering that right?
That does come from the EU.
Yeah, from, which no longer exists. Yeah, that's Legends Line.
From what I remember, I do remember that being a part of the EU somewhere, and it's lost in my brain exactly to where that was. It could have been that, but I don't know if it doesn't seem like something Zahn would have come up with, but I could be totally wrong. So just write us, you know, let us know.
Yeah.
an@thenerdparty.com. If we're wrong, we want to know it because, I love the EU, but I can't remember everything about it. I'm just not that good.
It's sitting right there in the back of my brain. And the thing is, it's also triggering another. I'm sorry. I know. It's triggering another whole thing about the languages for me. And it's I mentioned the universal translator a moment ago, and in Star Wars you have the protocol droids, and I want to get your read on it because I have an opinion. Which do you think is a better solution for a multicultural galaxy? Do you think it's better to have the universal translator or a protocol droid?
I like the universal translator better because it's not as annoying as C-3PO.
But TC-14 wasn't very annoying, was she?
No, she wasn't. So
she was all right.
No, you know. She was. I think it just makes it really interesting, and it sets the universe apart, this idea of droids, you know, because, and I'm thinking of Lucas back in the day, you know, robots had always been seen as, like, villains for a lot of sci-fi, and, yeah. You know, I'm thinking the day the Earth stood still and everything, and you're thinking of all those B-sci-fi films where the robots are the villains. And yet, you know, to make the robots these kind of lovable, almost pet-like creatures, you know, that you enjoy having around and somehow become your friends, even though they speak in ones and zeros, basically, is such an endearing thing. And I think it really, I think George just created something very special with the idea of droids and the idea that, all these different languages, it kind of made sense that you would need a protocol droid to speak 6 million forms of communication. So,
see, for me, I definitely fall on the side of the protocol droid because the protocol droid is going to know not just the language. I mean, how many times, you know, do you see, you know, in Star Trek where the universal translator, you know, oh, it isn't quite working, or, oh, it's, you know, right. I said it, but I said it in the wrong way. Like, a protocol droid is in existence not just to translate but also to, you know, observe the customs and the inflections and the body language, if you will. So
yes,
like,
yes,
3PO could interpret the body language of somebody and say, you know, if it wasn't 3PO, well, they're saying this, but this is what it means when their hand moves this way, right? Like, and a computer can store all of that, you know, a little robot brain can store all of that sort of information. As opposed to some, I mean, because it's not enough just to know somebody's language. You have to know their customs. Like, I could learn Japanese and I could fly over to Japan and I could create an international incident because I might know the language, but I don't know that you're not supposed to, high five the emperor or something like, you know what I'm saying? Like, whereas a TC-14, let's not say 3PO because 3PO is sort of a bumbling fool, but like, you know, a TC-14, I could go for the high five and TC-14 could like grab my arm and be like, wait, wait, yeah, no, don't do that. So that's why I fall on the protocol droid scale.
Well, and I think what's honestly what's going to be really interesting, because this whole idea of droids is going to be, I think, completely put on its axis. I mean, it's going to be completely changed when Rogue One comes out, because K2SO, we've heard already that this is a droid who's been under the thumb of the Imperials, the kind of slavish programming that it has. And so adding a whole new layer to the idea of what we think of as droids, I think is going to be very, very interesting in the ways in which, you know, a droid that's freed from that wants to join the rebellion. So they're adding something completely different to the idea of droids that I think is, again, it's really going to turn on our heads something that we've just not seen before in Star Wars. So, I'm I'm excited to see a whole new side of the galaxy that we've never even considered before, because as I said before, you know, we kind of think of droids as the lovable pets of the galaxy, but that's because we've only seen droids that have been treated well for the most part. I mean, R2 is beloved by Anakin and Luke, and 3PO is tolerated by everyone.
Nobody has melted him down yet.
No, even though Han very much wants to, and I completely understand why.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Although,
even with the red arm. So.
Red arm? Was that a thing?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Remember,
did he have a red arm?
In The Force Awakens, he had a red arm. That's why you didn't recognize him.
I barely even remember that.
Yeah.
They didn't even draw any attention to it. Mm-hmm. It was weird.
Yeah, it's so weird.
So here's a question for you, though, because you're mentioning 3PO and droids and everything. 3PO in Empire Strikes Back is translating the Falcon for Han.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And Chewie. Wouldn't Han and Chewie have been really screwed, and Leia for that matter, if 3PO hadn't been on the ship? How is it that Han, maybe this explains the condition of the Falcon, in that Han can't understand the computer that is telling him how to fix things? That's intriguing. I hadn't considered that before this moment, that 3PO, if 3PO isn't there, they're just going to root around on the Falcon. They're going to have zero clue as to what it is they have to fix.
I don't honestly know. That is a really great question. I think that's a fantastic question as to how that is supposed to work. Because to me, maybe the thing is that he always goes to Jiffy Lube. And they always have the droid that can understand the Falcon, and I guess maybe it I don't know, would it be Jar Jar Lube,
That would be a very unfortunately named company or product.
That was his only option,
Jar Jar Lube could have like the cure for anything. And I don't think anybody in the Star Wars galaxy, everybody, hey, let's go to Jar Jar Lube. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. That's not going to be a thing. So it didn't last very long. But, poor guy. Anyway.
You know what killed me, though? Actually, just to sort of like round it out to bring it, because you mentioned Jar Jar, is the first time they walk into Odo Gunga, you can hear the Gungans in the background speaking Gungan.
Yes.
Not
yes,
basic.
Yes.
And I wish, even if you're not going to have Jar Jar act as translator, or you're going to have them switch at some point and say to the Jedi, well, you're outsiders, so we'll speak your language, but, you know, because you can't manage ours or something.
Right.
I would have enjoyed it. And this is, again, I think a practical reason why they wouldn't have done it. But what do you think about the idea that when the Gungans battle the droids, do you think it would have added to the mystique of the Gungans and possibly partially redeemed them in some fans' eyes if they had been speaking Gungan through that final battle instead of English?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, there's an impracticality to it with the way that it's constructed. But do you think that they should have approached it as, well, we'll construct it so you can understand it only visually and they'll speak, but you'll sort of pick it up like you do with Chewie or R2 by context?
It might have been more interesting to have Jar Jar be translator, almost. I think it would just add a little bit of mystique to the Gungans. I think that the fact that they all did kind of talk in this kind of strange cutesy language, it hurt them, and which is sad, because seriously, we get to the Clone Wars and they freaking take Grievous down. I mean, they're the only people I've ever seen take Grievous down other than Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Captain Tarples for life.
Yes,
man.
I mean, that guy is a bad A. Mother,
yes, he is.
Jar Jar Gungan. I mean, so
right.
Cool. So, I think it's pretty fascinating the way in which, that series alone did a lot to redeem the Gungans. And even Jar Jar himself, I think, in a lot of ways, just worked better as a an animated character. So,
well, I mean, you know, he is, you know,
he already is an animated character.
Yeah, he's an animated character.
Yeah. Yeah. But
who speaks basic, though? That's the important thing.
That is true. But I think that's really interesting, this whole idea of Star Wars and language and, you know, the ways in which it never had one specific rule. You know, I think that's what made it really interesting. And so the fact that you have, say, for Chewie, one rule where Chewie just speaks his language and you either understand him or you don't, or you just kind of pick up on it, is great. You know, and then for other aliens, you know, we need that translated, you know, or we need a translation droid. We need a protocol droid. You know, I think it what it really did is it solidified the universe, and it helped create a feeling that this universe was real in some ways, you know, because of the differences in the languages and the way that people would understand some and some people wouldn't. So I really like that. Kind of funny that we just kind of ended up on this when we were supposed to be talking about something completely different.
I know. Sorry about that.
That's
but
okay.
You know what? That is what makes aggressive negotiations special, folks, is these are the conversations that we, as good friends who love Star Wars, you know that you've sat in a corner and you've had conversations just like this. And as Matt said earlier, we would love to hear from you. We do have an email address, A for aggressive, N for negotiations, @thenerdparty.com. Go ahead and reach out to us. We would love to hear your take on these things. You can also reach us on Twitter, @TheJediMasters, or on the network's Twitter handle, which is @JoinNerdParty. I think that would be great. I'd love to hear other people's take on this.
Well, yeah, no, I would too. And on top of that, John, you can also check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, where our episodes get posted. Great place to have a conversation there as well. And love to hear everybody's thoughts about so many places to get in touch with us that way, you know. But one thing, John, I would be remiss. Another remiss. That's right.
There's a lot of remission happening on this show.
And it can't happen. It just can't happen. And the reason I would be remiss is because, you know, we've been doing our review contest here, and we've only got a couple weeks left on that.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
That's right. And so the review contest has been going on here on iTunes, and we want to thank everybody who's gone there and done that. Really appreciate it. It definitely helps the show grow. You know, there are a lot of Star Wars podcasts out there, so if you think people should be listening to our show, giving us a review really does help. And I really want to thank my good friend Riley Blanton. He gave us a review, Riley Guy. Fantastic 5-star review. Really thank it. And it was just short and sweet. He said, "Love would Matt and John do. Cheers, guys." Title
cheers
was
to you, Riley.
In-depth Star Wars discussion. So thank you so much, Riley. Really appreciate you taking that time out. It means a lot to us to have fans from other podcasts like the Star Wars Report, which is fantastic. And if you like the show, help us out. And we're not asking you to do this for, say, free, because we are having a contest, and you can win some wonderful goodies that I personally got in my Smuggler's Bounty box from Funko. And I got a couple things in there that are exclusives. I got a really cool C-3PO hat and a wonderful mug of Jabba the Hutt that we would love to give to you. So just a couple weeks left on this. Make sure you get your review in, and then we'll pick the winner on the show in just a couple of weeks.
And, you know, another great way that they can help the show, Matt, is they can go over to lootcrate.com /nerdparty. Enter the code nerdparty at checkout, and you will get a discount on a wonderful monthly service where they send you a box of goodies every single month, and they have themes every month. And these themes are pretty darn clever. I mean, they put in shirts, collectibles, exclusives you can't find anywhere else. And they put them in this box. They send it to you. It's less than $20 a month. And you get so many cool things. And the theme, actually, for the month of October, of course, is Shocktober, where they are, if you're a horror fan, okay, I've read.
And I know you are, John.
Oh my gosh, am I ever. They are. I even still remember reading and loving Death Troopers. Which was, if anybody remembers the big zombie mashup, that's one of my favorite Star Wars ancillary books ever. But going over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code nerdparty, and they're going to send you a box in October of Shocktober stuff with things from Friday the 13th and Halloween and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and just things that, that go bump in the night and give you goosebumps. So go on over and check that out and help the show out.
I do want to say a quick thank you to somebody out there did that, and we saw the returns for that on the show. So thank you, whoever it was.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, because not only does it help us out, but it helps us keep getting supported from Loot Crate. So we really do appreciate your support.
And it helps keeps us trucking along. But you know what else we live on, Matt? What we truly live on as podcasters is discussion with people who listen to the show. So why don't you go ahead and let people know where they can find you elsewhere when you're not on Aggressive Negotiations?
Well, John, I'm on a network called Trek.fm. You can find that online, and I do a few shows there. You can find me doing The Orb with Chris Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. I also do a show with a couple of guys called Literary Treks, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. I'm joined there by Bruce Gibson and Dan Gunther. Fantastic. We also get to interview authors. In fact, we just had Star Wars and Star Trek author John Jackson Miller on to talk about his upcoming Star Trek series. So you check that out. Super fun. And you can also find me doing the General Geek Show there, where we talk about all the fandoms that we love, from Star Wars to James Bond to Harry Potter to Lord of the Rings. I mean, you name it, we're probably talking about it, new and old things. It's a blast. And in fact, we also have our own dedicated Star Wars feed there that I think everybody would love as well, because my illustrious friend John Mills is on almost every single one of those episodes. And so I know it's good stuff. But
except for one. There was one episode I wasn't on. So if you haven't listened to the feed, you have to go back and you have to listen to all those episodes and figure out which one I'm missing from.
That's right.
I know which one it is.
Now, John, you're all over the place, too, and I know you love talking to people. So where can they find you online?
Matt, I love talking to people. I love talking at people. I love talking to walls and my cat and my dog. And you can usually find me doing that pretty much on your social network of choice. Look for Kessel Junkie. That's me everywhere. And you can also find me also over on the Trek FM network, co-hosting Stage 9 with Mike Schindler. We look at the non-Star Trek work of Trek creators, and co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where we get into a different bit of trouble every single week.
Well, John, you know, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.